And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
Come on, Lee.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio, Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is success. Each of my guests is discussing success in one form or another. My next guest is a Civil War historian and an author. He's an expert on the Battle of Gettysburg. It's the 148th anniversary of Gettysburg this year. We'll examine how the North's success in the battle forged a unified nation. As always, if you want to join in the conversation or ask a question, you can call us at 639-0008. J.D. Pedrucci is a longtime student of American history specializing in the Civil War. He was recently named the historical advisor for the upcoming 8-part TV miniseries to Appomattox, which is scheduled to be released in the summer of 2013. J.D.'s most recent book is titled The Complete Gettysburg Guide. It features maps and complete design by the acclaimed cartographer-designer Stephen Stanley. The book won the U.S. Army Award for Excellence in the reference category. Following the release of the Gettysburg Guide, it was featured on the national TV shows such as History Channel and PBS. J.D.'s forthcoming book is the new Gettysburg Campaign Handbook. It's due out in July. It commemorates the 140th anniversary of the battle, as I said. In addition to studying history, J.D. enjoys outdoor pursuits such as gardening, fishing, and traveling. He lives in Northwest Pennsylvania with his wife. Welcome to the show, J.D. How are you today?
Good, Billy. Great talking with you.
Thank you. Pleasure to have you on the show. I do love talking to thought leaders. And, you know, most of us remember the Battle of Gettysburg from our history books, but few of us have studied the battle as you have. So, and fewer of us realize that the Gettysburg campaign actually started at Brandy Station in Virginia on June the 9th, 1863.
Right.
So take us through the campaign from Brandy Station, Virginia, to Robert E. Lee's escape on July 14th of 1863.
Sure. Well, shortly before Brandy Station, in the spring of 63, Robert E. Lee decides that he wants to make a second attempt to take the war into the North, to get it out of Virginia, which has been pretty well ravaged by the war, you know, by that time. He had tried the previous fall in September of 62, which culminated in the Maryland campaign, or what people more commonly, you know as the Battle of Antietam, and he was pretty badly repulsed there. But when he decides, and you know, it's approved by the Confederate leaders, particularly Jefferson Davis, the president, to try again and take it into Pennsylvania, Brandy Station ends up breaking out on June the 9th, which is mainly a cavalry battle. It was the largest cavalry battle ever fought on the North American continent, you know, let alone the Civil War.
Hmm.
Jeb Stuart, the Confederate cavalry leader, is surprised there by Joe Hooker's cavalry. He was the leader at the time of the Federal Army of the Potomac. He's relieved later on in June by George Meade, and that's why Meade, you know, ends up commanding at the Battle of Gettysburg. But once Stuart is repulsed there and Lee's plans are just delayed for that one day, he begins to move his army north. And the cavalry of both sides is again going to clash over the next few weeks, mainly in the mountain passes of the Blue Ridge and the Shenandoah Valley. And once Lee does finally get all three corps of his army into Pennsylvania, just a couple of days before the Battle of Gettysburg starts on July 1st, 1863, he's pretty spread out. And when one of his advanced elements, a division under Major General Henry Heath, clashes with, and I think everybody's heard of good old John Buford,
yes,
the Brigadier General. And anybody who's watched the movie Gettysburg pretty much knows, you know, from the start to finish how some of this happens. But Buford's cavalry is set up west and north of Gettysburg. They've gotten there ahead of the rest of the Federal Army, and the battle breaks out early on the morning of July 1st.
Well, it's an interesting battle. What made it so seminal in Civil War and U.S. history, though, J.D.?
Well, good question. You know, a lot of people refer to Gettysburg as like the turning point of the Civil War, and I think that's the common conception of Gettysburg. If we place it, you know, within the context of the entire war, everybody kind of looks at the summer of 63, July 63, Gettysburg in particular, as really being the turning point where, you know, maybe it's a foregone conclusion that the Confederates lose the war, but really, I think Gettysburg, in combination with the fall of Vicksburg, Mississippi, the Confederate stronghold in the West, because of the fact that U.S. Grant sieges and then conquers Vicksburg, in fact, the following day, July 4th, that in combination with Gettysburg, I think, really is you know, the turning point of the war, if there was such a thing. But something that really does cause maybe that turning point as far as Robert E. Lee, the commander in the East, is concerned, is the fact that at Gettysburg, his officer corps is really decimated. And, you know, when you're talking about success and so forth, I think something like 60 or 65% of his officer corps in his entire army is wounded or killed. And that's really hard to recover from. When you've got, you know, regiments that maybe started the campaign out with 400, 500, 600 men in a regiment, all of a sudden at the end of the Battle of Gettysburg and everybody's, you know, taking a head count on July 4th, and some of those regiments are literally down to 15 men.
Wow.
50 men, yeah. And instead of being commanded by a colonel or a lieutenant colonel, now you've got, you know, sergeants, non-coms, maybe a lieutenant that's commanding those regiments. And that's that, coupled with the fact that he suffers over 50% casualties, that's really hard to recover from.
My guest is J.D. Pedruzzi, author of the forthcoming book, The New Gettysburg Campaign Handbook. And J.D., talking about the officer corps, it really does bring up the stark contrast between the officers of the North and the officers of the South. Some would argue that the South actually had better officers, although they lost more of them than the North did. Comment on that. Was the South really, at the leadership level, better prepared and better trained for the war, or is that just a common misconception?
Well, you know, in some respects it may be true, although I think it's maybe a broad misconception. It is very true that as far as the South is concerned, you know, a lot of those pre-war West Point officers, those trained officers that really, you know, both sides were so hungry for when the war started, many of those West Point trained officers were from the South. And, you know, whereas the North had its West Point, both Northern and Southern, you know, men went there. The South also had VMI, the Virginia Military Institute, mm-hmm. which was a fantastic training ground, you know, for officers. I can't remember the numbers, but I do think the highest percentage of West Point trained officers that existed, you know, at the time that the Civil War broke out, went to the South. So they had those trained officers. Now, you know, it may not mean as much later on in during the Civil War when the tactics kind of changed. And of course, we were just talking about, you know, the officer corps really being dwindled. But going into it, you know, there's probably a grain of truth to that, that they had more of those trained officers. Whereas in the North, you know, you were getting a lot of political officers as well, which didn't help.
No.
If you could raise a regiment, you know, or if you could raise a brigade, you got a colonelship, you know, or a generalship. And so many of the Northern junior officers, when the war broke out, found themselves, and, you know, they went to West Point, and maybe they've been in the pre-war army 10, 15, 20 years. They found themselves being commanded by guys who were politicians or citizens or whatever before, and got jumped over them in grade just because they raised a regiment, you know. Dan Sickles is a good example of that. One of the most, you know, probably loved and hated generals who commanded in the Federal Army at Gettysburg. You know, became, I believe, a colonel first and then a general, and he was commanding guys who, you know, they had officerships long before the war started, and it creates some friction, you know, some difficulty.
Not only some friction, but obviously some tactical and strategic difficulty as well. My guest is J.D. Pedruzzi, author of the forthcoming book about Gettysburg. And everybody knows, J.D., Abraham Lincoln penned the Gettysburg Address to commemorate the battle. Only 272 words, which is an incredible literary feat. One of my favorite quotes from the book was, "The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what we did here." Now, Lincoln was half right. Not only do we remember the battle, but we also remember what he says. What is the significance of Lincoln's Gettysburg Address in U.S. history?
Well, you know, I agree with people who call it probably, you know, the best 272 words ever said, or maybe the most ever said, you know, in such a short speech. There's an interesting irony in that line that you quoted about, you know, the world will not really remember what we're saying here at this dedication event. Edward Everett, one of the nation's greatest orators, had just spoken before him for 2 hours, you know, and you can kind of imagine maybe how Everett might have felt when he heard that line. But then once Lincoln's speech was over, wrote him a note, something about, "You said more in 2 minutes, you know, than I said in 2 hours." So he came to that realization that there was something amazingly powerful in what Lincoln wrote. And I think so much of that comes out of the fact that, you know, this war was really in Lincoln's soul and his heart. And whether you believe some of those things where he said, you know, this war is killing me, you know, he thought he was going to maybe die after that. And wow, you can really see it in the pictures. If you've ever done a photographic study of Lincoln when, you know, he's first elected, and just those, you know, years up to 1865, how much he actually ages. You know, we see our president's age, but this is really etched on his face. Yeah. You know, it seems like he aged 30 years in just those 4 or 5 years. Mm. And I think it deserves the fact, the address, that it's, you know, the only address in the world that I know of that specifically has a monument dedicated to it. And it's down there at Gettysburg. And, of course, it's etched forever on his memorial in Washington.
Yes, it is.
I don't know that anybody else could put so much in so little, you know, space.
Oh, it's a work of literary genius. It absolutely was. But in the speech, Lincoln also says that all men are created equal, which, of course, he's taking from the Declaration. But mm-hmm. was Lincoln an abolitionist at this date in history? Had he turned and become a public abolitionist at this point?
Well, you know, you get both sides of that. And I've done some studying there, because there are people who have looked at, like, his letters, you know, and things written about him. That have said that, you know, he was very much against slavery, and I'm reminded of a line that he said, something like, you know, those who believe in slavery ought to have it tried on them. you know, so he was many angles. He was a pragmatist, you know, that he realized, I think, that, you know, the country really couldn't survive. The United States was the last civilized nation, you know, to still have slavery. And it was also a political tool, somewhat. The Emancipation Proclamation, although, you know, he believed in it, I do believe, that he felt slavery was wrong. He also knew that that would be one further nail in the coffin of the Southern Confederacy, so to speak, that when he issued that proclamation, if the South then still wanted to cling to the slavery institution, they would get no foreign support. You know, Britain would not be able to support them, any of the other nations. So I think he saw that as a political end. But I think that, you know, as intelligent as he was and as much of a pragmatist as he was, I do believe that in his heart he was anti-slavery. I think he really believed that all men are created equal. And he tried to get that point across, obviously, in the address. A fantastic way to sort of bring the Constitution around full circle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Part of his brilliance. My guest is J.D. Pedrucci, author of the book, or the forthcoming book, The New Gettysburg Campaign Handbook. And J.D., you know, Civil War battlefields are disappearing at an alarming rate. Developers even want to put a casino near the Gettysburg battlefield.
Right.
You know, are these battlefields sacred, or should they be developed as a byproduct of progress?
Well, you know, if we don't see it and touch it and experience it, I think it's difficult to understand it. And I think that's what battlefields do, you know, for us. I was in on that fight both times, you know, when this cooperation or group or whatever, you know, has tried to put the casino at Gettysburg a couple of times. And, in fact, they're appealing now to the state Supreme Court here in Pennsylvania, even after, you know, being repulsed twice. But, yeah, it's important to remember that, like, Gettysburg, for instance, is a national military park. You know, it's not just a national park just to be seen and enjoyed, you know, for its views and its natural beauty, excuse me, all of which it has. But it's important to remember that it's a military park, which means it's there for us to also study and discuss the battle tactics, you know, everything about this battle that is so poignant for the way our nation is today. And it's also an incredible sculpture garden. You know, one of the biggest facets about Gettysburg that's there for us to enjoy today is the fact that the veterans came back and placed those monuments. That they're basically saying, we were here. You know, this is what we did. This is our memorial for all time, so that people can come back and study and learn. And, you know, you can look at those photographs of some of the dead soldiers that are around the field and go stand where they are. And I kind of do that, and I look down at my feet, and sometimes I say thank you. You know,
wow.
for the men of both sides, that we sort of learn not only the lesson of, you know, them lovingly placing these monuments so that we can honor their sacrifice, but also maybe to say to ourselves, let's hope to God this never happens again. and you know, that everything can be resolved either through political means or diplomacy, or just realizing that cooler heads can prevail, you know, and we can work things out, but never again, never again.
And that is a good sentiment. My guest is J.D. Perducci, author of the forthcoming book, The New Gettysburg Campaign Handbook. J.D., what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, The New Gettysburg Campaign Handbook?
It was a nice little way to get some things into a book that we really couldn't in the Complete Gettysburg Guide, which came out in 2009. And that guide we really did because one of the things that's most important for me, like I was just mentioning, is that people go out for themselves and be able to see these places. You know, it's one thing to read about them in the comfort of your armchair, but when you can actually go out there on a battlefield, drive along the roads where they walked, you know, leading to different battles and so forth. The handbook has a lot of data and statistics. There's a complete order of battle in there, really, I think, the most updated, you know, and accurate that's ever been done for Gettysburg. A lot of those little interesting human aspects are in there. There's a section on the Gettysburg Address. There's a section on not only the officers, but also civilians, as well as some interesting privates and, you know, common soldiers that fought during the battle. So.
And J.D., if people want to get the book, they want to learn more about you, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Probably for everybody would be Amazon.
Amazon, all right.
You can find all the books there. And we also have a website. It's CompleteGettysburgGuide.com.
Great. We're going to have to leave it there, David. Thank you so much for being my special guest.